Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's Do the Right Thing! And welcome to the podcast panel show that wants to do the right thing in any situation. For example, what is the right way to turn off a computer? Go on about your bloody ex on the first date. We're at the Soho Theatre in London. I'm Danielle Ward, and with me trying to do the right thing today, on my left, he's the spiritual successor to Rick Mayall in that he's a nightmare to work with and he won't be on telly ever again. It's Michael Legg!
I'm utterly flattered by the word again.
And with him, star of Derek and therefore facilitator of Ricky Gervais's continuing mental breakdown, it's Fred Goldstein!
Oh dear.
And on my right, she's so Catholic, when she took a Which Sex and the City character are you quiz, she got Miranda's belt. It's Margaret Cable Smith! And with her, like the bastard offspring of a Wookiee and the entire Bullingdon Club, it's Humphrey Carr. There's only one way to start a show like this, and that is with round one.
The importance of being right.
Just like a primary school teacher who wants to show her pupils a picture of a woodcock, I've run into some unexpected problems online. In this round, I'm going to give each team a scenario and they're going to tell me what is the right thing to do according to a book I found in a skip and also the internet. Margaret and Humphrey, bored of your current partners but not sexually attracted to each other, you decide to start tag team dating and put a postcard up in your local newsagent window asking if any of the locals fancy buying you dinner. You get one reply. However, your suitor is a total tosspiece who thinks women are only good for cooking and cleaning and having babies, and he voted UKIP. After a quick consultation at the free salad bar, because he took you to a harvester, you decide you'd like to leave, thank you. So what is the right way to escape from a bad date, according to cosmopolitan.com?
Leave a harvester?
Well, first of all, I'm not sure what I'm getting out of this. So far, it's me and Margaret and another man on a date. And whilst I have no problem with that, it's not really my cup of tea.
But surely that's even more reason to escape.
But did Margaret fool me into thinking that he was bringing a lady friend?
No.
Oh. God, I really am extremely polite. It's true. Well,
have you ever been on a bad date, Humphrey?
Yes, I've been on one really bad date. So, get a load of this, gang. I got picked up once at the baggage carousel at Heathrow Airport.
What were you doing on that?
Yeah. Someone mistook you for something.
Yeah. Well, as an outsized piece of baggage, I get removed first. No, a lady picked me up, you know, in traditional, hey, so how's it going? And she was very attractive and I was very excited and we went for a date, which was...
Immediately?
Not immediately. A couple of days later, we met up in Camden Town. Already the first mistake, because neither of us were trying to buy psychedelic Viking hats. And therefore, there's no need to be in Camden. And she was very beautiful, very complicated character, who, over the course of our date... I'm quite straight-laced, gang. Over the course of our date, she offered me, initially, Vicodin. I mean, we've all done that.
Is that a sort of pet?
That's a super hardcore pain-relieving pill.
What was she doing to you?
It was just like she'd open a bag of M&Ms. She's like, oh, do you want one? It's like, oh, no. Then we proceeded through an increasingly serious selection of drugs until the horse was offered. Heroin, as the kids, I believe, call it these days. And then she told me she was an American, but couldn't go back there because she'd be arrested.
Was she taking one of these drugs? Every drug she offered, was she taking one herself?
She popped a few Vicodin and a couple of Eckies. I'm down with the lingo of the kids.
Eccles cakes.
Ecstasy pills. Yeah. Ecstasy pills crushed up in Eccles cakes.
Yeah.
And I mean, by this stage, I was all at sea because she was not interested in talking about Xbox games, which is pretty much my number one topic of conversation. I went to the loo about 8 times.
I didn't, and at what point
use
did
it.
You
I just went and hidden
escape?
It. I somehow found myself back on the tube with her and then eventually got off 3 stops early and changed to a different line.
Well, and moved. That's when you moved to America.
And that's when. Yeah,
that's one way out.
I do now live in America, where she is legally not allowed to enter.
Brilliant.
Yeah,
I don't think I've ever been asked out on a date, ever.
Wasn't there someone who asked you out because of Do the Right Thing, and didn't you fall asleep on her or something in a bar? Yeah. Oh, now he's remembered, guys.
Oh no. Yeah, the veil has fallen. His memory. Oh yes, of course. Sleepy.
Yeah.
Fun times.
All right. I've been asked that once. I went on a date years ago. This has nothing to do with it, you know. I asked someone out on a date, right? I was so excited about taking this person out. I thought I'll take her somewhere really cool, and I took her to this bar called Gordon's Wine Bar, which I thought was cool. It's not. And I took her to this place. She went, oh, this looks nice. I went, yeah, it does look nice, doesn't it? And I thought, I'm really grown up and sophisticated. And I said, what would you like to drink, white or red? She went, white, definitely not red. I went, don't like red. She went, no, I've only ever had it once. When I woke up, I shat the bed. That was it. We had a glass of wine. That was the date. Because it's really hard to get
past
shit
that.
Out of your brain. On a first date.
So I take it no one's been on a blind date then?
Loads of people have.
I always think it's weird that Gary Lineker, who only met his wife like 10 years ago or something, claimed that they were set up on a blind date. How does that work? It's a blind date for him, but for her. Oh, what's he look like? Well, he's Gary Lineker, so he'll look like Gary Lineker. It's ridiculous.
Brett Goldstein, have you ever used Tinder?
I have, yeah. It was a disaster. I wouldn't use it again. It's like being an evil casting director. You're just like, nah, they're not right. They're not right for this scene. And you don't have you don't have anything other than the picture. And, you know, I'm very shallow. But it turns out you do actually sort of need to sort of speak to someone a bit, because when they turn up, they're suddenly three-dimensional and awful. And
no.
you've realised, oh, yeah, there are sort of other steps, actually, aren't there? I met this girl. She was really beautiful. I think there's a theme. And I was supposed to meet her at 6:30, which is quite early. And she didn't turn up until 7. And she was absolutely fucking hammered. She completely hammered. And we went to this restaurant. She was so rude to all the waiting staff. And then she started a fight with someone and then turned to me like, you'll deal with this. And I thought, no. And I really wanted to say to the person, I don't know her. We just met. I'm sort of on your side. I'm in a terrible position here. And, I mean, we're married now. And
Humphrey and Margaret, hi. How would you escape from a date with someone? They're a horrible person.
Flashbangs.
I did once leave a work party that I really didn't want to be at, and it was pre-mobile phones. So, you know that emergency call you have where you go, oh, my sister's having a really bad time. I went and made that call myself. I went away to a payphone and said, well, I've just rung my sister to check she's okay. And she's not. I'm going to have to go.
So is your suggestion go to a payphone?
Get someone to ring you. I know that's a bad
Humphrey,
thing.
How would you get out of this update?
I'd fake a pregnancy scare.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
Producer Ben, what is the actual answer?
Well, they gave quite a few suggestions, Cosmopolitan. I'm going to give Humphrey a half mark. And I'm
for
gonna
flashbangs?
For lying. And I'm going to give Michael a half mark for reasons I will explain in a second. So they say you could just get up and walk out, but sometimes it's easier to avoid a scene by coming up with a creative excuse. Their example is start rummaging through your purse whilst becoming more and more agitated, then mutter something about losing your keys, wallet, or a winning lottery ticket, and insist that you've got to go and find it. Chances are the jerk won't offer to help. But I think pregnancy scare is sort
basically
of a lie.
Same thing, isn't it? Yeah.
And then, Michael, your half mark, I mean, this was actually seemingly possibly the person you were on a date with doing this to you, I don't know. But they suggest gross him out.
Oh, good.
Something like...
Oh, so, that's what she was doing.
I think the red wine shitting yourself is a bit like gross him out. Anyway, so half a point to each team.
Yay!
Michael and Brett, finding yourselves with a bit of post-Edinburgh downtime, i.e. no work, you decide that what the comedy world is missing is a nice place for stand-ups to go and meditate, so you pull your leftover birthday money and build a rockery. It's so tranquil, the birds are singing, the bees are buzzing. Oh no, a bee has just stung Lee Evans in the throat. You can't let him die, but there's also no phone reception. Lee can't breathe. So what is the right way to perform an emergency tracheotomy according to the Worst Case Survival Handbook?
I really feel like you've put me under a lot of pressure now. I think Lee's going to die.
Right, have you ever witnessed a life or death situation?
I once saved someone's life with the Heimlich. However...
Oh, my God!
Well, is the
You're
thing...
suddenly much more attractive.
Oh, thank you. Look for me on Tinder. The thing is, I used to work in this nightclub, let's call it, in Marbella. And in the morning, we went to this 24-hour restaurant at like 7 in the morning, and we got a table and we were sat next to these mafia people, right? And the wife of one of the mafia suddenly started choking, properly choking. I've never seen it when it actually really happens, where she's like, and she stood up, and no one did anything for it. And then I was, in my head, thought, well, you have to do that thing where you do the thing, but I don't really know the thing. But I thought, it's weird. She's not, I don't know her, but there are other people who do know her, but no one's doing anything. But I think they were too shocked. So anyway, I stand up, I go over, I hug her from behind, do the thing. Eventually, she sort of pukes and comes out and she goes, oh, amazing. And her friend goes, wow, you saved her life. And I go, thanks. And then I look up at her husband, and her husband has not stopped eating his steak. And he looks at me like, you fucking prick.
Oh,
I was nearly afraid.
Oh, my God.
He looks furious.
Oh, my God.
That's incredible. Yeah. Shall we stop and go home?
Yeah. I don't really know what to say.
Yeah, no, you could have just killed her and made it up to him.
Yeah. I almost did the opposite of what Brett did, which was my best friend literally was choking on something. And I blame her for this. I said, I said, do you want me to pat you on the back? And she sarcastically shook her head. And but I didn't know she was being sarcastic, so I was like...
sarcastically dying.
She said, yeah. She shook her head, so I was like, oh, she's just having a cough, and I wandered off. And it turned out she'd swallowed a small piece of biro. someone did slap her on the back, and she choked out. But she said, why didn't you save me? I said, well, why didn't you ask for help like a normal person instead of employ sarcasm as you're dying?
I've done something genuinely heroic. I put someone out who was on fire once.
Did you?
Wow. With what? Him to the ground and rolling around. It was a Christmas party. I was at university and he was dressed as a snowman and he wrapped a load of cotton wool around himself. And then someone didn't realise how flammable cotton wool was.
Oh, my God. Mm.
And as a joke, was like, wee, with a lighter near him. And he went up like a match. And everyone was like, fuck, what do you do? And I was like, oh, I know. You're supposed to, like, fall on them and then, like, roll them around to the fire.
Isn't that a grenade?
Yeah, it's basically the same thing. And then I was really furious because basically after someone was like, did you see that? It was awful. He was on fire. And then he just sort of went out. What do you mean? He didn't just go out. But you can't say that. That's not what heroes do. I was just like...
Did you get any burn off it?
Burnt hands, a little bit, but, like, nothing. He had to be wrapped in, like...
More cotton wool.
Yeah. And, like, yeah. And then what's it called? Cling film.
That's a proper hero.
Cling film up when you went into the... And I just, you know, I just never brought it up again all the time on podcasts.
We've established Humphrey and Brett are both heroes. If you were in this situation, Michael, do you think you would... Do you think you'd be heroic or do you think you'd just run away crying?
Can't you do both?
I've been a hero. Have you?
Yeah, yeah. I've saved someone's life.
When?
Hear the mocking laughter, Michael.
Well, I was at Hammersmith train station and a woman fell down the concrete steps in Hammersmith and, like, smashed her head up. It was fucking terrifying. And, like, the good British public that we're used to, everyone looked at her and then got on the train and got on the van. I went, oh, fuck, fine, I'll do it. And went over and took my coat off and, like, made sure her head was secure and she was completely out. And I realised why people don't go over to help people, because you go and run, oh, fuck, they're going to die and I'm the last person they'll ever see. What a shit exit. So there I was holding her hand and asking her name and sort of trying to get her, you know. She didn't recognise me. That was rude.
Do you think you were rude. Dave Gorman?
Yeah.
That's a better way to go.
Dave Gorman, let me go. Oh, no, I know. But she was fine. And she even emailed me and all that stuff. Like, I mean, we haven't seen each other since. A bit rude. But my point is... my point is, the next day, I took my coat to the dry clean. My coat was caked in blood. And I just went, oh, yeah, it's a lot of blood because I saved someone's life. And they're like, no. And then they washed the coat. And whenever I came to pick up my coat, they went, no, you don't have to pay for that. It's on the house. And that's how killers get away with it.
Okay, I'll simplify the question for you two. Should you attempt a tracheotomy if the person is gasping for air?
I'm going to say yeah, because you know what? I've had a couple of drinks.
I think you're supposed to do it with a biro with a hole in it.
Yeah, you're supposed to take a biro without the lead in it, whatever it is. The
ink.
Stab them in the face. No, stab them. Yeah. Stab it in the throat and then walk away.
So you've got your pen.
Yeah.
Brett just stabs it through the throat.
Yeah, he's
very
gone.
Strong.
Yeah. You've got to look for the gap just under the Ooh. Adam's apple on the fellas. You whammo the old pen in, and then I think you have to blow down it first.
Or is it
because
stuck?
You get like a plug of flesh. You've got to blow that out, and then it clears the airway.
Oh, okay.
You're blowing it into
tummy.
Yeah, you into blow it into their throat, but it's only a tiny thing. It doesn't really like.
It's just like when you do that thing where you snort down the back of your throat. Just a bit like that.
Exactly like
you
that.
You think you're saving your life every time you do that, don't you?
Producer Ben, what is the actual answer?
Well, I'm going to give Humphrey one well-earned point, and I'm going to give Brett half a point as well for starting the ball rolling with the old stabbing in the throat.
Thank you.
To answer the simplified question, if they're gasping for air, do the Heimlich manoeuvre before you attempt this. But basically, only use this procedure when a person with a throat obstruction is not able to breathe at all. Find the person's Adam's apple, move your finger about 1 inch down the neck, and there's another bulge below it. In between the two, that's where you make your incision. Insert your tube, breathe into the tube with two quick breaths, which I assume must be to clear it. Pause 5 seconds, then give one breath every 5 seconds. You'll see the chest rise, and the person should regain consciousness. Can I just say, if anyone listens to this podcast and performs a tracheotomy, we are not liable. So at the end of that round, Humphrey and Margaret have 1.5, and Michael and Brett have 1 point.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Grab your biscuits, we're dunking them in agony. In this round, I'll be asking the panel to have a chuckle at the lives of those beautiful idiots who help fund this podcast, the audience. But before that can happen, I'm going to warm them up with a real problem sent to a real actual agony aunt. Margaret, could you please read this out?
Of course. Dear agony aunt, my boyfriend is dull and rude and barely pays me any attention. Really, I should dump him, but there's a weird reason I haven't. He's got a third nipple in the centre of his ribcage, and when he takes his T-shirt off, his torso resembles a very kind-looking face.
This is a real problem.
With his regular nipples as eyes, his additional nipple as a little nose, and his belly button as a cute, surprised little mouth. Anyway, I've taken to calling this chest man Christopher, and when my boyfriend is sleeping, I have long one-sided conversations with him about my feelings. Christopher's a great listener, and although he never responds, it's clear he oozes compassion and sympathy.
Gross.
I've even started to develop feelings for Chris and taken to kissing his mouth stroke belly button when my boyfriend is snoring heavily. What should I do?
Oh, my God.
You should definitely pass that letter on to your boyfriend and the problem will be solved.
Yeah.
You need to draw another nipple onto the bottom side so that that face don't look so nice anymore. It looks a bit sneery.
Or you could just kill the boyfriend and isolate the body part you do love and marry that and be happy forever.
Michael, do you have any weird fetishes in the bedroom?
Yeah, I like... I'm really into people not enjoying sex with me.
Brett, you're very candid about these things. You must have some fetishes you want to share.
No, absolutely not. Perfectly normal. Just like it normal. Good old normal sex. Lovely, lovely normal.
Humphrey, are any of your body parts named?
I used to call my penis Jeffrey when I was very small. I don't really know why.
Because of rainbow?
Very possibly. I was a big rainbow fan.
Or because of Toys R Us.
That's the name of the giraffe, isn't it?
Yeah.
Good, that is good knowledge.
Thank you. I know all the Jeffreys. Or because of the butler in Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah,
could, which is more like your thing? Are those
well, those
three?
Really were. Those really were the triumvirate of my youth. Why? What did you call your?
I used to call my breast Margot and Jerry. Right.
Was one much more bossy than the other?
Michael.
Well,
what's yours called?
What's your D called?
Well, we've never really been formally introduced. We're still on just handshaking terms.
I did go out with a guy who... I think he did call his penis a giraffe because it was really freckly.
When you say that's... freckly, was it like big panels?
I didn't
freckles,
look
like
at it, Humphrey. Look at it. I've never seen one. I'm a good
you
girl.
Them. You hear them a lot. At night.
They're coming for me, scratching.
Against the window.
Yeah, and the doors and the floor. A friend of mine at school thought that that penises had pincers at the end of them, and the way you got pregnant was if the pincer plucked a pubic hair from you, and that's how you got pregnant. She had a baby when she was 17.
Producer Ben, what is the actual answer the agony aunt gave?
I'm going to give Humphrey half a mark.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, get committed.
So this is a genuine agony aunt letter from Dear Dolly in the Metro Herald newspaper in Dublin, and she said, I'd love to say this happens all the time, but that would be a lie. You're a strange, troubled woman. Normally I'd suggest a straitjacket, half a mark to Humphrey, but in your case I'd worry about you developing an inappropriate relationship with the buttons on it. Best to put up with your dull boyfriend if it means you can indulge your fetish. Just promise you won't start introducing Chris to your friends.
Oh my
that's
God.
That's terrible advice.
Yeah, that's dreadful like a really, advice.
Really irresponsible.
Well, now you've seen how a real agony aunt does it, let's see how you handle some problems from tonight's audience. Is Lucy here? Lucy with the Flatmates.
Not one of the best Beatles songs, Lucy with the Flatmates.
Lucy says, I live with four other girls and they never wash up, clean or do the bathroom. I've tried a rota, I've tried just asking them, but nothing works. The place is now getting so gross, I found a frog and a load of slugs in my kitchen. Why was there a frog in your kitchen?
Well, they tend to leave the back door open and we live by a little river. And so, from a little frog came in.
Sounds idyllic.
Oh, no, it's a shithole. It's horrible.
I think you should throw all of the washing up away.
And just buy all new plates and everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And make them pay for it.
Yeah, make them pay.
Have I told the Mickey the Mug story on Dinner
Right
Now?
Oh, God, no, you haven't, but I don't know.
Two friends of mine had a flatmate called Mickey. Brilliant. Anyway, all the cups went missing in their flat. Couldn't find any cups. So these two friends of mine just got like, you know, have you left a load of cups in your room? No, that's Mickey. There's no cups in his room. Don't know where the cups have gone. Then eventually, one of my friends, his girlfriend, bought him a cup with his name on it and a picture of Donald Duck, right? But it's got his name. And I said, no one will touch that because it's got your name on it. We're going to find. Anyway, 2 days later, the cup went missing. So he went, look, I'm sick of this. One of you two must have, you know, these cups in Europe. But honestly, we've got no cups in the room. Then, when they were both out, one of the guys went into Mickey's room. There was no cups around, but for some reason, he decided to look under the bed, and that's where all the cups were. with cum in them.
So what he's saying is be grateful that it's not as bad as that.
Did you look inside the cups and there were like all different deformed Ripley's?
Yeah. Yeah, they were.
Was he building towards something or was it just a...
Well, I know Norris McWhirter was on his way
around. Have you tried taking all of the dirty plates and dumping them in your flatmates' beds?
I haven't, no.
And then being like, chew on that, cocksmokers. And then they'll be like, you're being really unreasonable. And you'll be like, you are. And then if they keep arguing, just cry.
And if that doesn't work, come and everything.
Oh, yeah. Margaret, have you ever lived with untidy flatmates?
I mean, not more than me, no. Well, no, yeah, my husband's worse. And my child, but she is a tiny child, so...
Are they children that you're living with?
No, they're all adults.
Does make it more difficult.
It does.
You can physically dominate children.
I think you're going to have to do that disclaimer again.
You could just take things hostage of theirs that they like and say you'll return them if they clean plates.
What kind of things would you suggest?
Oh,
what have they got?
I mean, do I have to do everything, you see?
Christ!
What are they studying?
Their gold fob watch.
What's the worst one studying? Yes, their lands. Use your bannerman to seize their lands. That's what I do. What's the worst offender studying?
Sociology.
Fuck me.
Interesting.
Why don't you take their crayons? She don't know anything about it. It's like the stock, like geography, colouring in. They'll have to stand in for sociology. That's sort of studying in people, right, isn't it?
Yeah.
Take their people away.
Humphrey, they don't have people, darling. Not everyone does.
What about, could you... Are they all ladies? Yeah, they're all ladies, aren't they? You said that. Okay. Take away their right to the vote.
Lucy, who do you give points to?
I think I'm going to go for Humphrey, but not for the votes, for putting the plates in their bed.
Yeah.
I think that's a good idea, so I'm going to go with that.
Round of applause for Lucy. Okay, let's check the scores, producer Ben.
Michael and Brett have 2, Margaret and Humphrey have 3.
It's time to meet someone who actually knows what they're talking about as we ask the experts. In this round, I'm asking the panel to think like experts. Good ones, not like Andy Townsend. Anyway, the aim of the game is to second guess what our expert guest thinks is the right thing to do in certain situations. So let's welcome today's expert, music journalist Simon Price. Simon Price. I'm so excited, Simon Price. I read your book when I was young.
Really? Yeah. Wow, you're one of the 20,000. Well done.
In a moment, you're going to have to second guess what Simon would do in some pop journo scenarios. But before that, you've got a chance to get to know him a little bit better with some carefully chosen questions.
Have you ever thought about getting a proper job?
Well, it was either this or stand-up comedy, and this seemed like the lesser of two evils.
Have you ever seen the coin that music journalists flip to decide whether or not they like Morrissey?
I happen to have it in my pocket at the moment, actually.
If you were on a desert island and you could have all the records in the world or a monkey butler who made you food, what would you choose?
If a monkey butler who made food could also use the kind of bones and leftovers of that food to play a tune and I could teach him,
yeah.
I think that's got to be monkey jukebox butler.
What's the deal with Catherine Jenkins?
This is Humphrey, man of the people. NME.
She does music, isn't she? Right? I don't know. I'm not very good on music.
Is this because I'm Welsh and you think we all know each other?
No, it's literally the only musician he's heard of. Yeah.
Humphrey, have you got a favourite band, Humphrey?
Have I got a favourite band? probably the Mass Bands of the Household Division, I would think. No, I'm only being very silly. Very silly.
We're cutting after that.
So here's the first scenario we put to Simon. You have been asked to review David Bowie doing a top secret gig at the 100 Club by Rolling Stone magazine. They are paying a handsome sum for your copy. You have a press ticket, a voucher for a shandy, and access all areas pass, which means you get to go into that room at the back with the gross fridge. Swanky! This night is going to be amazing, but oh no, you have fallen asleep watching a Jeremy Renner film. We've all been there. And wake up to realise you've missed the gig entirely. Your deadline is in 2 hours. What would Simon do in this situation?
I feel genuinely panicked.
Can I just say well done for pronouncing David Bowie correctly, by the way? I really judge people on that.
I did say Bowie for a long time because he called his son Zowie. How does Zowie Bowie work? Zoe.
How do you know it's not Zoe?
Because it's not spelt Zoe.
Tell that to Zoe Bowie. Deschanel,
no,
mate.
She can fuck off.
You've got to step up.
She can't spell either. Sorry. Anyway, yes, scenario.
Anyway, so
scenario.
Simon has missed the gig and he has to hand in a review. What do you think he would do in this situation?
Ring Bowie and ask him to do it again?
Yeah, because we're
at
like
your
that.
House? Yeah, yeah. I assume that's the...
Bowie, can you give us the gist?
You can surely wing a fake. You just say, oh, I don't want to spoil it. But it was really good. Well,
it was really good.
It was really good.
I think Simon would turn in a fantastic 700 words about how on the way to the gig, he saw a house burning down full of orphans, and he had to rescue them and so didn't go to the gig. But then Bowie called him up afterwards and said, nice one, Simon, down the phone. It was even better than a secret gig.
Simon, what would you do in this situation?
Well, it's a tricky one. If you miss the start, it's fine, because these days everybody takes tablets to gigs. I don't mean the Sean Ryder Bez type, but people who do are arseholes, because, you know, you're holding up this kind of glowing A4 sheet of paper which ruins everyone's experience, and yet it's brilliant for journalists because it means that everything that ever happens in the world now is filmed. And also, as long as your deadline isn't like right that second, it'll be on YouTube. You know, setlist.fm will say what all the songs were. If you miss some of the gig, you can get away with it. But yeah, I mean, it can really go badly wrong. A friend of mine, Chris Roberts, was reviewing Susie and the Banshees, and he went to see them. He left before the encores, and he gave in this review, and this is before the days of text messaging and the internet, and it was the most beautifully written start, middle, end. It ended on this beautiful, succinct summary, this beautiful sentence at the end, and he gave it in. And then the news broke over the weekend that Susie had fallen off stage and broken a leg in the encores. So basically, this review ran. The review as it stood, and then at the end, oh, by the way, she broke her leg. If you want me to say now who I'd give the points to, I really like the way Humphrey got really creative with the burning orphans. And to be honest, quite a lot of my stuff reads like that anyway. So let's go with that. Points to Humphrey.
Points to Humphrey.
Turns out you don't have to know anything about music to really like a music jacket.
So, Simon, you've been booked to do an in-depth interview with a notoriously grumpy pop star, think Lou Reed, RIP, but much, much worse. He turns up flanked by flunkies, wearing sunglasses and a big hat, and the first thing he says is, I had to miss a colonic for this, my bowels hate you already. You've got a 90-minute slot booked, and his people will make you stay there every single minute because they're desperate to get some good publicity for him. So what would Simon do in this situation?
I think you have to make something out of the bowels thing, don't you? You sort of say, OK, let's talk about the colonic. What's all that about? And hope that that spins into 90 minutes of shitty gold.
Michael, you used to interview people on MTV, didn't you?
Yeah, I've met them all. I did 2 days of interviewing bands. The first band I ever interviewed was Coldplay. Yeah. I think they're below par, but they're, you know, very big. And they said, this really is your first interview, aren't you? You're really nervous. Because my hand was shaking holding the microphone. I went, don't worry. Just calm down. It'll be absolutely fine. And I went, oh, God, no offence. I'm in no way nervous about interviewing you. I've literally just been told my next person is Madonna. You aren't even registering right here. I don't care.
Did you interview Madonna?
Yeah, do you want to know what my interview with Madonna was? It was hello. She said hello. That was it. That was literally it. And then I was told to go away.
Humphrey, you're very hello. Charming. Have you ever? Has anybody ever hated you when they've met you?
Well, if, having an accent like this means that 90% of people just hate you on sound, if not on sight. You know, just interacting with normal people in a way that...
No, it's saying things like that. calling them normal people.
No, I don't mean to differentiate myself from normal people. I just meant, like, normal people who are not my friends. people that don't see beyond the frosty hauteur that I shield myself with.
So, Simon, yes. You've got a grumpy pop star. How do you deal with this situation?
Well, first of all, if it is Lou Reed and he's got some kind of bowel problem, I kind of want to see the nappy. You know, I think what I'm thinking, I'm thinking in terms of photo opportunities here, but what you often get with pop stars is that they've done 20 interviews in a day and they're just recycling the same answers over and over again. And what you've got to do is somehow put them at ease. And you can do it by almost being a stalker and being obsequious to the point of, you know, if they're obsessed with Save the Penguin, you go in there knowing everything about the crisis in penguin life, you know. It really doesn't matter what it is. Just pretend you give a shit.
And who would you give points to on that answer?
I think for being rude about real-life pop stars, it's got to be Michael.
Michael Legg!
You didn't answer the question.
All right. I can't remember. The question was a long time ago.
Before you go, Simon, is there anything you would like to plug?
I haven't got a book out, but it's about time I did. There's a very old one. It's out there on eBay. You can probably pick it up in charity shops. Go and buy that.
It's really good. Yeah. It's a good book, but only if you like things.
Yes.
If you like things.
Well, thank you very much.
He might have a book out by the time the podcast comes out.
Right, guys? Club? When you plug your club?
Oh, yeah, I do a glam rock night in Brighton called Stay Beautiful and an 80s one called Spellbound. There you go. Turn up to that. It's really good.
Thank you very much, me, Dan, Miss Simon Price. Scores produce the best.
The scores are that Michael and Brett have got 3 and Margaret and Humphrey have 4.
Do the wrong thing! Do the wrong thing! Do the wrong thing!
In this final round, I want the panellists to tell me what is the wrongest thing to do in any given situation. The winner gets a fancy pen engraved with the words Bic Medium. The round ends when producer Ben can't control his horn any longer. Right, first question. You wake up to find your penis is invisible. What is the wrong thing to do?
It's not really a fair question because, I mean, my penis is invisible.
No, it isn't. It's wrong to forget that the rest of you isn't invisible. And so if you think, oh, brilliant, I'll start using this on people, they'll know.
Step on it by mistake. Yeah. Hey, anyone? I'm inferring mine's really big and I can step on it. I can't, it's not true. It's pretty normal sized.
Colin Firth asked to borrow 10 pence for a cup of tea. What's the wrong thing to do?
Give him 9p and then laugh for a month.
Accidentally bankroll Mamma Mia to Papa Pia.
That one.
A ghost asked to inhabit your body for fun while you sleep. He pays £5 an hour. What is the wrong thing to do?
Put it on WooTube.
Not set up a direct debit because ghosts are very unreliable.
You can unlock any door just by wishing. What is the wrong thing to do?
Forget to put your nan in your prayers.
Or kill a baby dolphin.
Well done. Like Sepp Blatter, we just don't know when to quit. But thankfully, producer Ben does. What are the final scores, Ben?
Well, very excitingly, it's all turned round. Margaret and Humphrey have 5. Michael and Brett have 6.
Oh, fuck off, mate.
No! Fuck you!
What?
Fuck you!
Well done to Michael and Brett. Thanks for listening to the show. Goodbye! Do the Right Thing featured Humphrey Carr, Brett Goldstein, Margaret Cable, Smith, Michael Legg, expert guest Simon Price, and me, Danielle Walker. I'm advised by producer Ben Walker. I wrote the script together with extra material from David Reed. Martin White did the music. Thanks to the Soho Theatre for having us, and to Sarah Grun and Natasha Caffrey for helping out. Do the Right Thing is a Fuzz production for the internet. Thank you for downloading Do the Right Thing podcast. Because we never ever ask you for money or give out these slots to actual advertisers, we have a little word from our sponsors, me and Michael Legg, right now. Please come and see my Edinburgh Fringe show, which is on at the Edinburgh Fringe in Edinburgh at 12:30 every single day. That's lunchtime, not in the evening. 12:30 every day at the Voodoo Rooms, apart from Tuesdays, because I get tired and sad.
I will definitely be going to see Danielle's show every day. If it wasn't for the fact that I also have a show at the same time. Well, it's on at 12:10, stand 2. My show's called Tell It Like It Is, Steve. Why is it called Tell It Like It Is, Steve? come and find out. It was about the time that I realised when I was about 18 that I was a prick.
What year is this? Just for future listeners, you know.
Oh, I thought you just had Quantum Leap or something.
Just people who hear this podcast in a year's time or something, you know.
Oh, it's 2015, the year Back to the Future 2 is set.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.